All right, welcome to the review of WWE's TLC Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. I am Patrick, with me, Evan Weston and Dustin Hales. Brothers, we are a day removed from TLC, but I don't know about you guys. I'm excited to talk about it, even though I have almost no voice left.
You sound good to me, Patrick.
Hey, you sound better than Enzo.
Yeah, you sound a lot better than Enzo.
We got to give you that. I mean, I was wondering, whenever he came out, literally I tweeted out, I was like, how did he get past the quarantine?
That is a good question. I appreciate the good thoughts. I didn't go to work today, so I could save my voice just for this podcast, so maybe it paid off.
That's dedication.
Yes, you know. Who needs a paycheck, right? You got to take care of the podcast.
I didn't go to work today either, but that's because I was off.
All right, so let's get to it. So here's the rundown of the card real quick. The pre-show, Sasha Banks defeats Alicia Fox. Then in the main card, Asuka defeats Emma. Cedric Alexander and Rich Swann defeat Jack Gallagher and Brian Kendrick. Alexa Bliss defeats Mickey James to retain the Women's Championship. Enzo defeats Kalisto to win the Cruiserweight Championship. Finn Balor defeats AJ Styles. Jason Jordan defeats Elias Sampson. And in your main event, in a 5-on-3 handicap TLC match, Kurt Angle, Dean Ambrose, Seth Rollins defeat Miz, Cesaro, Sheamus, Braun, and Kane. So let's start with this main event. This chaotic 35-plus minute just scrambled eggs with home fries and a whole lot of bacon.
There's a lot of bacon in it.
You know what's funny, Patrick? Actually, the way you describe that is kind of accurate. It's like you go someplace to go get like one of their big breakfast things, and it's good just because it's a lot of food and it's like bacon and eggs and stuff, but it's not really any, like, it's only good because it's 2 a.m. and you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be good at any other time.
It's just a bunch of shit piled on each other.
It's just a bunch of food. It's just a, yeah. just to sustain you.
Like, it was very filling.
Yes, it was overfilling. Afterward, yeah. You come out feeling like,
I probably should have shaved 10 minutes off that meal.
Yeah, I probably shouldn't have had the, you know, double order of hash browns. But that match, it was kind of exactly what I thought it was going to be. There were some good and interesting spots in it. It's one of those matches where you can't call it good, but you can't really call it bad either, like terrible, because there were just weird things that were happening throughout. One of the things, though, I wish to happen, I think it would have made it a little better if there was nothing in there that really surprised me. They didn't have any surprises in the match, from my personal point of view, that really popped me for anything. Like, Kane turning on Braun Strowman. I don't want to see Kane versus Braun Strowman. So it didn't really pop me, you know, for that. And then, you know, throwing Strowman in the garbage, you know, the garbage truck and compacting him was interesting.
Certainly tasteful.
Exactly.
Second attempted vehicular homicide on Braun Strowman in the span of 4 months.
That's right. I think Roman's was better, though.
Oh, yes. Much better.
But here's the thing for me. The thing about that match is I actually would have been okay with the Miz's team winning because it wasn't the full Shield. I would have been okay with them losing. If that makes sense. They didn't need to win that match because it wasn't the full force of the Shield, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree. I thought initially, well, it was funny. I was on vacation this past weekend, and I didn't have internet until Sunday morning. So I get the internet back, and I went, I was like, oh, let me go check on the betting odds for the pay-per-view. And there's Kurt Angle is listed next to Dean Ambrose.
Oh, God, but you didn't have the internet, so you didn't
I had no idea. So I'm like, what? That's got to be a typo. And so I, you know, went into Google, and sure enough, my favorite wrestler has been removed from the pay-per-view. Although my second favorite wrestler right now was also added to the pay-per-view. So I guess it all worked out. But yeah, it was just, it was so weird. And what was weirder was that, you know, and I know that there was the reason that they did this was because they really had no time to do anything else. But they just plugged Kurt into Roman's spot in the match and added a little, you know, like, but with the stuff that Roman would have done, only adding in the you know, mid-match nap, which I assume Roman wouldn't have done, although we've seen them do it with him in the past. But I assume he wouldn't have done that. But anyway, I mean, the finish was, I guarantee you, exactly what they were originally planning.
Yep.
The beginning of the match, I guarantee you, was exactly spot for spot what was originally planned. And so you have the big return of Kurt Angle done in a panic move, and you have Kurt Angle cosplaying Roman Reigns in the main event of a WWE pay-per-view. It was so weird.
It was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen.
I saw it put on Twitter, and I multiple people said this, that it was like if you were playing 2K and you just put Roman's moveset, costume, and entrance on Kurt Angle. That's what it was like. It was so strange. I actually would be a little bit harsher than you, Dustin. I didn't think this was good. It might have been good in a smaller dose. There was no reason for this to go 35 minutes long. Come on. Well, absolutely no reason. The match had already been blown up. You know, once Roman was out, Roman's the kind of guy, and he's done this in multi-mans earlier this year and in the past, he would have held this together. Yeah. And without him,
there was
very little coherence. You know, Ambrose and Rollins, I thought, did a nice job. They were there mostly to sell, I thought they did a nice job. I thought The Miz was easily the standout performer of the match. But without Roman, this just, it was, and they were telling two different stories. One was Angle's return versus The Miz and, you know, the Shield versus Miz story, which was also incoherent within itself. And then they were telling the Braun Kane story along with it, but neither narrative met the other at all. So it was a complete mess. It's not something I can ever imagine myself watching again. And it was way too goddamn long. It's not that there weren't moments that I enjoyed. I actually thought the Kane Braun turn was the best executed moment of the match because they chose Braun to turn face. I kind of assumed it would go the other way because Kane has recently been on a face run for the last couple of years, and choosing Braun to be the guy that goes babyface I thought was a smart decision. And I'm curious to see where he goes from here. I don't think, after the Lesnar match, I don't think there was anywhere left to go with Braun as a heel. He needed a dramatic change because, I mean, that match was just a complete disaster. And you and I talked about it at the time, and I kind of equivocated. I've come to your side. That was just a total failure on every level. So turning him face was the only choice. So I appreciated that, but the way it was done was just, I don't know, everything kind of felt slow and...
I agree, yeah.
And it was just incoherent is the best way that I can put it. I don't want to say lethargic, but the match didn't have any energy. It clumped along, you know? It didn't have any urgency.
It had a giant sag in it, too.
It felt like a match that was just thrown together at the last minute, which of course it was.
What it was.
I have such a problem being so harsh on it, and I don't want to be. And I'm going to give the pay-per-view a bit of a break for it in my final grade. But in a vacuum, this was not good, and it's not something that it'll be revisited in years to come as one of the weirder pay-per-view matches. And one of the weirder stories. There's going to be a really fun podcast about this match in 10 years or so.
Yeah.
But as it is, I wouldn't want to watch it again. It was bizarre, and it didn't work. I'm sorry.
Here's the thing for me. I 100% agree with everything you said. The only reason why I give it a little more is because it gave me Twitter fodder. Like, it gave me...
It really did. Well, it was so dumb. It was just so stupid.
It was just incredibly, like you said, nothing kind of... Like, everything was... It was just everywhere. It was something where... It was everywhere, and it was odd. It gave you that sense of kind of weird, because like you said, like, Kurt Angle's, like, cosplaying as Roman, and it's like, what? Like, what's going on right now?
And of all people to do that, Kurt Angle, who's about as far away from Roman Reigns as you can possibly get.
Yes. No, I agree with you, though. That match is just one of those... It's funny because I tweeted out my brother Devin. He named every single WWE main event from the year 2000 all the way to current off the top of his head in 40 minutes a couple weeks ago.
Impressive.
I said this is going to be a match that Devin's going to remember 20 years from now when nobody has any idea who's in the match.
Yep. Yeah, you remember that really weird TLC match where Kurt Angle was Roman Reigns?
That's almost like crappy. You know,
I don't think I'll forget this because it was so strange. But I can't imagine wanting to watch it again.
No, I agree. This is a match I never want to see it again. Right? Not,
and it's funny not, because
see it again.
Sorry, Dustin, go ahead.
Yeah, it's not that I never want to see it again. It's just that I have no desire to see it ever again.
And at the end of the day, it was meaningless, right? Nothing happened. I mean, the Miz got his comeuppance in the end, which is always fun to watch because the Miz is the best heel in the history of the business. Miz is the WWE MVP right now, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, the Miz got his comeuppance. It was an emotionally satisfying end to the match, but it was ephemeral. It was nothing. It was froth.
Yeah,
but it shouldn't have been because the Shield was supposed to be back. So now we're in this weird holding pattern when Survivor Series was kind of going to be a break from, you know, heavy narrative anyway, because they're positioning it as the WWE All-Star game. So, which I love. I love that idea. But we're in this period now where nothing matters, you know?
Oh yeah, I agree. It's that,
and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but yeah, no, totally. But it was weird that this match didn't matter because I was ready for this to kind of be the last bit of real story we got.
Bit of something until, to kind of grasp the Rumble.
Right? And it of no fault of their own, of course, it just wasn't. So you can't knock them for it at all because they were just put in an impossible spot. But. You know, it is what it is. I guess they made the most of what they had, but at least let Angle do a little bit of Angle stuff. You know, why is he doing the roar?
He plugged into the same exact, like, they literally took every Roman spot.
His mannerisms. And the best part was when I knew the whole thing was going to be hilarious was when the Shield made their entrance, and Rollins and Ambrose were up on the ramp, and I was ready for Kurt to do his regular entrance, and here comes Kurt. like a total mark, with a huge grin on his face.
Oh, it looks like me coming out to, like, a WWE pay-per-view or something, in my Roman vest, you know? Like,
I mean, I don't know if it was one of you guys, or somebody who put in that it looked like a photo from from Axis. It looked like an Axis photo.
Yes, it was. Here's a fan posing with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins.
Yes,
it was so funny. I just started laughing so hard.
Like I said, Twitter's always fun during pay-per-views. I tweeted that. I was like, please. I tweeted laugh. Can't stop laughing. please pause your feed and look at Kurt Angle. Like,
yeah.
I was like, you got it. It's ridiculous.
The grin on his face was the clincher for me. It was just how Mark, he was marking out. I'm in the Shield, you know? And I think it was actually Dustin, I think it was your brother who said this, that his theory was that they were building to, and it still might be, building to Angle versus Miz, and just kind of panicked and you know, pressed fast forward a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that seems to be the plan. So, and I'd still be very interested to see that match if they end up doing it. So,
yeah, the match, I definitely didn't think it was very good, but in a handicap 5-on-3 tables, ladders, and chairs, I wasn't expecting there to be anything fantastic out of this. Oddly enough, my expectations were met because I thought this match would be some type of chaotic, big scrambled breakfast, and indeed, that's what we got. At least, like you guys said, you know, it's something that they had to put together last minute. They lost Roman, and it's kind of like, okay, they added a different ingredient, but they kind of stayed to make the same meal they were going to prepare for the main course. And, you know, you change an ingredient, the meal is not going to taste the same. And I think that's what we got. And as I'm making myself hungry now, let's talk about the next match that had to be changed. And this was a blessing because I think we got a match, to me, is way better than what we'd have gotten with Sister Abigail and the demon Finn Balor. But we get AJ Styles flying in from Chile. Thank goodness he didn't get, you know, blocked by immigration from trying to come in the country. He was able to return in time to face Finn Balor. Not resembling a pumpkin to the surprise of many. But yes, Finn Balor against AJ Styles. To me, this was my favorite match of the night. I think the match could have been a lot better, but given circumstances, I thought it was pretty good, and I enjoy. I think it's maybe you guys may agree, may not agree, but one of Finn's better matches in the recent year.
Maybe his best one, I thought. You know, AJ Styles, when it comes down to it, it remains, you know, if you had to pick a guy to fly in from halfway across the world and have one match, he's probably the guy, right? I mean, he's when he's unleashed at his full potential, he is just a savant in there. And, you know, it's funny, John Cena probably put it best. He was on Edge and Christian a couple months ago during the build to him and Roman, and they were asking him about AJ, and Cena didn't really have much to say. He just kept going, the dude is just super, super good. You know? and he is. And I'm not a big Finn Balor fan. I don't really like the way that they present him. I think
you're like my best friend.
He doesn't do anything differently when he's the demon. So why should I care when he puts
paint on? Literally the same thing I think.
He does the same. He wrestles the same match. It's ridiculous. So, but what was cool about this was, one, we didn't have to do Pumpkin Spice Finn versus Ray dressed as the scary chick from the ring, and we got a pretty good wrestling match. I didn't think it was, you know, a match of the year like all the Bullet Club marks on Twitter did. But it was really good. It was two guys. William Regal tweeted it out after. He said this was two competitors who wanted to win a fight. And that's what we got. And sometimes that's refreshing. You know, and AJ, whose job it is clearly is to, you know, be kind of a full-time version of what late period John Cena is. You know, win more than he loses, but be there to put guys over at the end of the day. Like, if Cena were around full-time still, I imagine he'd be doing what AJ's doing. And so, you know, that's kind of the role that they see Styles in. And I think that's, at 40 years old, that's probably a good use of him. And this was great. And they didn't give us too much that I wouldn't want to see a rematch. where they did say turn AJ heel again and do the whole Bullet Club thing, you know, which again, I didn't really care that much about, but it would, you know, it would clearly do good business. So if they wanted to do that, I couldn't fault them for it. And there's, you know, they could make it interesting. So yeah, I thought it was just a really great wrestling match. I enjoyed watching it. This is probably the only thing from the show that I'll end up revisiting at the end of the year. I gave it 4 stars, I think. Just a really, really good match. And credit to AJ for hopping on a flight and not getting any sleep and still going out there and going 20 minutes with a guy and putting him over and really, you know, dragging a really good match out of him.
Yeah, no, I'm going to have to. I basically agree with you 100% on this. We both kind of feel the same way about the match. And with Roman being out, I kind of feel the same way. AJ is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. So I was happy to at least see him step in and make a match that was that's better than what we would have gotten with, you know, some ridiculous, you know, Halloween-y Sister Abigail demon.
I should point out, sorry to cut you off, is not necessarily a bad thing. We must remember we're watching a children's show. We are sitting here talking to each other on Skype about a kid's show. That match was for children, and it's fine. Not everything has
to be. No, you've got it. You've got a good point.
But I'm glad we got something that did appeal to us as opposed to that. So, you know, but if that match had happened, that's basically what my take on it would have been. But yes, and provided it wasn't a complete disaster, which, you know, of course it could have been. Yeah, go ahead. I think you're right.
Yeah, I honestly probably would have found that match at least entertaining in some aspect. And when, here's the thing, if they wouldn't have gone too crazy with it, you know, Bray Wyatt, when he wants to, has the ability to have a good match. Finn Balor has that same ability.
I was so annoyed that they continued the feud because I thought they actually had a really good match last month.
Yeah.
Match that was almost as good as the one Finn had last night.
Yep.
And they were, you know, they had put a really nice capper on that feud, and then they kept it going just to, you know, have a match, you know, that really appealed to the kids. And yeah. So, you know, I hope they don't go back to it. I get the feeling they probably will, but I hope that they don't, because I think the No Mercy match was a good way to end it. And Finn is in a really good spot right now after AJ put him over as hard as he did.
I was about to say, the one thing that was really good about that match that I think came out that was even better than, I mean, I thought the match was probably the best wrestling on the card. I think it was the best match on the card easily. I put it right at about 4 stars, which you said. But I think the best thing about it is it made Finn look legit. In terms of it put him over. You know, that win, I mean, a clean win over AJ. But it didn't hurt AJ either, because you had this sense of
your back. No, it was essentially non-canon for AJ.
AJ was thrown into this match at the last minute, had to fly, you know. So you had
And he's that. Not on Raw. He's on SmackDown. So exactly. It's non-canon. It didn't happen.
Yeah.
SmackDown probably won't even acknowledge it. If they do, it'll be that he was in the match, not that he lost it.
Yep, exactly.
Although he was on Raw tonight and just got laid out by Kane, along with two other young main eventers, so... Yeah.
I do have to get on my soapbox real quick about... I was super annoyed. Here's the thing. I thought the match... I really liked the match a lot. AJ's just nuts bumping. You know, he bumps like a 20-year-old. But I really liked that match a lot. Like I said, I gave probably 4. I think it was the best thing on the show easily. But, man, did I hate the fans during that match. And... here's the reason why. Like, during the – I remember specifically – now, I'll tell you why here in a second. But I remember specifically I was watching the match, and I can't remember. I think it was Finn put AJ in a surfboard submission.
It was pretty early in the match.
And the fans started to, like, golf clap. Like, ooh. Like, you've never done that. Like, you're only doing this because it's Finn Balor versus AJ Styles. Like, you're not doing this. You would not do this for any other WWE
Dustin, man, we're Roman Reigns fans, right?
Yes.
We deal with this shit all the time. If you let the Bullet Club marks get to you, you can't enjoy anything.
No, I agree.
You just got to tune them out.
No, I agree 100%.
And you got to laugh at the fact that you're paying $1,000 to go boo people, you know?
Yeah.
And wear their Bullet Club shirt on TV. You know, whatever. Let them do it.
No, I know, but it's funny because you can see, like, if you watch that match and how the fans react in that match versus every other match on the card.
No, you're totally right.
It is a complete, you know.
You are totally right.
It is a distinct difference in how they.
This is what happens when there are 3 to 5 people that determine the opinions of an entire community. You know, yeah. That's what happens.
But I'll stop there. I'm done. I just wanted to really note the.
No, you're definitely right. You are definitely right. But I guess my counterpoint is that we just should not let that bother us because it's not going to change. And it's still jokes on them because, you know, they coughed up their money and I'm sitting here watching it on TV. So,
yeah,
you know, that's all. But yes, they were awful. You're not going to hear any counterpoint from me on that.
At the end of the day, that match was too sweet.
No, Patrick, stop. God damn it. Patrick. See, I just said this really nice, you know, I took the high ground, said we're going to ignore it, and now you got to sit here with your bullshit. God damn it, Patrick. Dustin's right. Damn it, you all suck.
But what else is sweet was Asuka making her main roster debut by defeating Emma in the opening match of the show. How did you guys enjoy it? Was it everything you expected? I thought it wasn't everything that it could have been. Maybe Asuka didn't come out as big as a killer as I was expecting her to. I think that they made her look just like a regular wrestler more than the Asuka that we've seen on NXT. But for the most part, though, I enjoyed it.
It was what I expected in a bad way. And to your point, Patrick, they made Asuka just like anybody else. And that's what I was fearing. And that's kind of what we got. Not to the same extent that Nakamura got with Dolph Ziggler, but similar. In that it took her a while to put away a wrestler that has been losing in 30 seconds to Nia Jax on TV within the last month or two. So, you know, Emma is just not presented as a threat on the main roster. She is more or less a complete jobber. And for her to suddenly be NXT Emma, in a vacuum, if you watch the match, it was a pretty good match. It was one of the better matches on the card, actually. In without context, but in context, I think this was, I can't say it was a failure because Asuka was still over, but it was not a sweeping success or anything like that. For her to go right to NXT Emma was totally incoherent. It made for a better match, but it didn't help to get Asuka over. I was looking for maybe a 4-minute competitive squash where Asuka gets all of her moves in and, you know, just generally dominates and wins. And we didn't get that. And I think that was a failure. Asuka being presented as just anybody else is a poor decision.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I kind of felt the same way. I liked the match a lot. But I kind of, like I felt the same way. That needed to be a squash match. And they needed to present, I agree, Asuka was presented as just another female talent from NXT who's a good wrestler. Not like the undefeated, you know, just, you know, retired
God as queen
champion from NXT because she was so dominant. You know, it didn't have that feel to it. luckily Asuka's over enough just presentation wise to where it didn't completely hurt her, you know, as bad as it could. But I agree, they really needed to make that a squash match, like you said, because Emma is, I agree with you, Emma's got, she should have beaten Emma super fast. It shouldn't have been, you know, a conversion to the old Emma from NXT who now can have competitive matches. You know, you're trying to present Asuka here as the dominant female star, you know, coming in and creating this, oh no, who can beat Asuka? Well, Emma had a good chance in that match. If you think about it, if you go back and watch the match, you're like, well, Emma had a good shot at beating Asuka.
She got at least 50% of the offense.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So right now you're thinking, you know, if you'd never watched NXT, you're thinking, you know, okay, she won the match. She's fun to watch. You know, she's got a cool presentation. But, I mean, she was competitive with Emma.
You know? Nothing special about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I also think, now, I don't know about this. I don't know where else she could have placed it. But I wonder if placing the match further into the card, now you have to be careful because, you know, certain areas can really hurt where you put a match. But I wonder if giving it, you know, not making it the first match, but a couple matches in might have given it a little more oomph in terms of...
You could have switched it with Alexa and Mickey.
Yeah, yeah. Giving it kind of a higher spot.
Put it after the cruiserweight tag.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, the opening match is typically more prestigious than the few matches that follow it.
It really is. I agree with you there.
You know, that's the way they're structuring their cards, you know, in recent years. It wasn't that it wasn't presented as a big deal. It's that she wasn't presented as, like you said, she wasn't presented as the god queen who was so utterly dominant and so ridiculous. Like, no one is ready for Asuka is a great catchphrase because it's true.
Yeah.
You know, but watching that match, if I had known nothing about her, I would say, oh, Alexa Bliss might be ready for Asuka, or Bayley might be ready for Asuka, or Sasha Banks might be ready for Asuka, which I guess is the idea, because they don't want Asuka to just destroy the rest of the women's division's credibility. I get that they have to walk a fine line, but, I mean, she should become champion in short order. There is no reason for her not to be the top character in the division and the dragon to be slayed for, what, a year more? You know?
Yes. Oh, I agree. I'm a huge fan of, you know, not keeping title on somebody and, you know, trying
she's
to...
unbeaten.
Yeah.
She's got a 500-plus day title reign and an unbeaten streak before she even gets on your show. Use it. No, yes. I think they will, but I don't know if they'll use it. Like the same thing that has happened a lot when NXT women are brought up to the main roster. The surface level stuff remains, but the stuff beneath the surface that made it work, the work that was put into it, the little details, those tend to be missing.
Yeah.
And I'm afraid that that's going to happen to Asuka the same way it happened to Bayley, the same way it's happened to others. The only women who come to the main roster from NXT and really succeed are women who either go through a drastic character change on the main roster, like Charlotte, or women who weren't fully formed in NXT and became so on the main roster, like Alexa Bliss and Carmella. People like Becky Lynch or Bayley or even Sasha tend to struggle because they get to keep the gimmick, but they don't necessarily get to keep the full character. And I'm afraid that's happening to Asuka here.
Yeah. No, that was very well said. I agree with you on that. It seems to be one of the things.
It seems to happen with just the women, and I don't know why. But, you know, I guess, you know, you got to remember, as of what, even 3 years ago, they were still treating the women like crap. Yeah. You know, this is a very recent development on the main roster. So it's going to take time, and it sucks that there's these, you know, these stodgy old men that write these characters, and it's going to take a lot of time. But it's
you got to work
frustrating as a viewer.
Yeah. It'll take it's going to take a lot of time.
Like a decade or more. It's going to take a lot of time. And the audience has to build that equity over time, and you need to Vince does a lot of things well, but of course there's a lot of drawbacks to him too. And this is one of them.
Yeah.
They just struggle to write female characters. They just do. I would love to see them, even if it's Stephanie, I would love to see them just have a woman in a prominent position in the creative team, you know, just to offer that perspective.
Yeah. Just to get that perspective in there and
just to build some characters a little bit.
Yep.
It is what it is. By the way, Raw update, Kane is now the top heel on the show, in case anybody's paying attention. So,
I've got it muted and I'm watching it.
Yeah, Kane just laid out pretty much the entire babyface roster and is probably going to beat Finn Balor right now.
He's beating Finn Balor, yes. Yeah. Believe me, I am watching.
I'm kind of horrified by it.
You guys took the words out of my mouth with that, pretty much said everything that needed to be said. So let's move on to the other women's match on the main card, where the queen of the WWE, Alexa Bliss, retained her title, of course. Maybe put old lady Mickie James finally out to pasture. Alexa wins. And Evan, how does it feel to know that likely Alexa will remain your Raw Women's Champion for a few more months?
No one is ready for Asuka. But that said,
on Patrick's part.
Patrick coming out here first with his too sweet bullshit, and now he's going after Mickey, perfectly innocent woman. You want how much crap this woman has dealt with in her career? Give her a break. You should be thanking her because she just gave Alexa one of her best matches in her career. So you should be thanking Mickey because they put on a pretty good match.
They did.
I thought it was a very successful one-cycle title defense. I don't know if the your old thing had all that much to it. I wasn't all that invested in it as a story, but they had a good match. You know, I was into Mickey's, you know, trying to prove that she could still hang. And I thought this was a presentation issue because Mickey is another character that has been presented as a jobber for months that is now suddenly a viable title contender. And so you have this other issue with the Raw women where they're whatever they need to be at that, whatever the plot is calling for them to be, rather than something organic. This is another issue that we have, not just the Raw women. This happens with women all over the company.
Background, you don't have any character development until they're in the forefront, and they just try to throw it all at one time.
Right, exactly. It rarely happens with the men. They tend to get built up. You know, gender is the exception, but they tend to get built up rather gradually. And their status on the card tends to matter. With the women, it doesn't.
Yeah.
If they need you to be the title challenger, then you're the title challenger, you know, and it drives me nuts. So that was my issue with getting into this was I didn't buy Mickey as credible, but I thought they did a good job within the match to get me into it. And I thought this was a success where the Asuka debut was probably a better match in a vacuum. This was more successful for what it wanted to accomplish.
Yeah, I think that this was a better I felt like it was a bigger match than Asuka Emma. I think it's because the way Alexa Bliss is just a great character. I think that just followed her character development followed into that match as well and kind of made it a little bigger for me. I thought it was a very well-structured match also. I thought it was one of the better structured matches on the card. Obviously, everything was structured better than that. But I liked both Alexa and Mickey in this match. I thought it was I'm going to have to agree with you, Evan. I think it was one of the better Alexa matches I've seen in a while.
Yeah, but, you know, the big knock on her has always been the in-ring, but she is starting to get more consistent.
Yeah, yep.
Which is something that we've said many a times, is she needed to just improve. I mean, she's still young, and, you know, all jokes aside on my part, there's still a lot she can improve on, but you're seeing that improvement. I mean, she's put in a position, first on SmackDown Live and now on Raw, for whatever reason, to be the champion. And that's, you know, that's for a reason. I mean, because it's not like they don't have options with women. And it's not like they couldn't turn Sasha if they really wanted a heel champion, you know, or something like that. So, to me, I think that they see a lot in Alexa, and you know, I'm happy that it's working, and I'm happy that she's improving, and who knows what she can become in a few years. But yeah, I enjoyed the match. I enjoyed the story, the young versus old. I think at least this gave people a reason to kind of get behind Mickey, because we've seen these two women battle before on SmackDown Live. Like, it's not like this feud has never happened before. So to add something different, kind of get people behind Mickey, I thought that was good. You know, whether or not it worked, at least they had a pretty good match, and I'm all happy about it.
Patrick, I hate to cut you off. So Kane just squashed Finn Balor, which means that all of the stuff that we said about how Finn felt like a big star, that's gone. It is now old information that our listeners can skip past, because Kane has just been put over as the biggest star on Monday Night Raw. So,
yes, I just saw that too, and I don't know. Just
squashed him, absolutely destroyed him.
Yes.
That is the worst booking decision I've seen them make in a long time.
Right after. Perfect platform for him to spring off of after beating AJ.
Do a DQ. Have Braun run in if you want to protect Kane or something. What are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too thrilled about it either.
Absolutely horrific. Ugh. And I was finally into Finn, you know, for the first time. And what was the point?
What? Apparently to feed him as fodder to Kane.
Well, right, and they're going to feed Kane to Braun, but then what's Braun going to do from there? Brock is still around.
Yep.
Is Braun? All right, I'm going to throw... I'm sorry I'm taking you off course here, Patrick. I think it's relevant because it pertains to what they did last night. Are they going to have Braun win the Royal Rumble and beat Jinder Mahal for the WWE title? Because that's the only thing I can think of that would possibly make sense if you're going to build around Braun as the top babyface after having Lesnar beat him.
Yep.
It's very, very bizarre. I don't really get what they're doing. Oh, God, if they try to do Kane versus Brock... Oh, God. All right, we can talk about something else.
Yes, please let's talk about this.
What if Kane is there to go over Braun, all in service of putting over Brock Lesnar? Oh, that's so plausible.
please, let's go to the next match.
Yes, let's talk about something else.
I'm just going to say this. You know, currently, the person behind the Monster Kane... may no longer be available to wrestle for a long time if he's successful in his political run for office. So you might as well get the most out of him now before you can't. So why not? We shall see. All right, to a title match that came out just like I expected. Enzo Amore defeats Kalisto to win the Cruiserweight Championship. Of course, shenanigans in order, but that's Enzo. The best thing out of this is the fact that Enzo lost his voice before the match got started.
Didn't stop him from talking.
No, but still, you know, I mean, not like I would have known because I had him on mute. Because when Enzo comes, I mute. That's basically how it goes these days. You know, I didn't have any expectations of Kalisto winning. I always figured that it would be a very short run. Enzo would have the title. There have been many talks of how the Enzo-Kalisto match on Raw was a change in plans from the original booking for that night. So I didn't have any expectations other than Enzo walking out with the championship at TLC. And indeed, that's what we got. And we'll probably get the Cruiserweights battling at Survivor Series. But until then, Enzo is your Cruiserweight champion. And he's going to tell everybody about it.
They have something here. But they also kind of don't, because I think the character of heel Enzo isn't great. I think it's really effective because he's such a dick, and I just want to see him get kicked in the dick so badly. But at the same time, I don't want to see him wrestle.
Yeah, you know? I completely agree.
If he's gonna be like, okay, why can't Enzo be? It can't be anybody on the show because they've all been killed by being on 205 Live for a year. Let's take hypothetical Braun-level cruiserweight. You know, who knows who it is. If Enzo were to be managing that character who were wrestling the matches, that would be freaking great. But I don't think that Enzo can cash the checks in the ring that he writes on the microphone. If that makes sense. I like the build to Enzo's matches a lot. I don't like the matches. I'm not compelled by the matches.
Yeah.
If they're going to do this work,
it does zero for me.
They need to do it with some smoke and mirrors. They need to make, you know, put some stipulations on it or get other people involved. You know, he's got this stable brewing now. You know, get them involved. Use these guys. Don't send Enzo out there to die for 10 minutes because he just can't do it. He is not capable of it. And so, you know, I get that it's kind of a meta story too, in that Enzo is a threat to the cruiserweight division having good matches, but that doesn't make the matches themselves any more fun to watch, you know? Nor were the cruiserweights even having great matches before he showed up. So it's a positive and it's a negative. If they're going to do this, he obviously has to have the belt. They shouldn't have taken off of him in the first place. But, you know, this was the worst thing on the show from a wrestling standpoint. I still like the story, but they've got to do something about the fact that Enzo sucks in the ring.
Yeah, he's just bad in the ring. And Kalisto's a guy who can have... I mean, Kalisto's a solid worker. He can have... You know, he... Kalisto is a very solid worker. He for a couple, you know, I can't remember how long ago, a year or two ago or something, he was one of the most consistent guys on the roster, really, in terms of having decent to good matches. But with Enzo in there, he's just not a good in-ring guy. He just can't do it.
He can't do it. He's not capable.
It just, like you said, I completely agree. He's gotten, I mean, I hate the guy, you know, so he's gotten me, and that's good. That's what they want. It's an, like, he has done a good job of getting me to dislike him.
Yeah.
But the problem is it doesn't translate into the ring. When the match starts, I am now done. He just doesn't have the mustard to put together, a match that's really worth watching. Like you said, maybe if they throw some stipulations in there. And I think it's kind of making everybody crazy because the Cruiserweights have always had good to great matches. They always have awesome matches. But there's been...
I wouldn't go nearly that far.
They seem... Well, yeah. And I think one of the main reasons is because there's no, like, Not one of them. I mean, Enzo came and won the Cruiserweight title, and he is, star-wise, he seems like 25 times the star of any other guy on that roster. On that
really cruiser. Is. That's he actually has charisma.
No, I know, that's what I'm saying, but what's ironic about that is before that happened, he was kind of just a guy on Raw who talked a lot. So it wasn't like he was a huge megastar and they put him in the cruiserweight division. It's just that he was so far above everybody else.
Well, you took the Beagle out of the large dog park and you put him in the small dog park with the wiener dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
That's exactly. And I think Enzo's one of those guys that the writers and everybody invents. They love him because he can, you know, oh, he can crack some jokes and talk. And
you know what? He's another act that originally him and Enzo and Cass as an act are very much targeted for children. It's another one of those that we are just not the intended audience.
Yeah. Yep. No, I completely agree with you on that.
But here's the thing about the Cruiserweights. The Cruiserweights are specifically designed to appeal to hardcore fans. They are not about kids. They're about bringing people back who loved WCW in 1997 and are thinking about subscribing to the network if it has a show about Cruiserweights, which is why 205 Live is such a failure, because it totally doesn't understand what made the 1996-97 WCW Cruiserweight division so great, but that's a different conversation entirely.
Yeah.
I think what's happening now with Enzo is kind of the singularity for the Cruiserweight division. They have realized that they don't get the appeal of it and so are taking it in a different direction. I think Enzo is in fact the end game for this. I don't know that it will really exist all that much longer. It's just kind of weird. Because he can't wrestle. Yeah. Emma is working on top of Asuka again right now.
As another quick aside, Asuka's getting destroyed currently.
This Raw is terrible. This is the first Monday Night Football Raw, I think, that we've had. We got really far into the season. But Kane going over the entire roster, and now this.
What is going on right now? I'm literally watching Emma destroy Asuka.
This is a Monday Night Football. Emma just broke out of the Asuka lock.
What is going on? No, sorry. I had to. I know that you, if you had Raw on, I knew you were about to say the same thing because I was like, wait a minute. I was like, what is happening?
In a rematch, they might have Asuka kick her in the head and win in 10 seconds. And they are not.
They're doing the opposite of that. I'm kind of worried, like,
what's going on here?
Yeah, I don't know. Sorry, Patrick.
Patrick, we're really sorry that we haven't been talking about TLC.
Oh, no, that's totally fine. I'm watching it along with you guys.
This Raw is, it's relevant, too, because some of the work they did last night has been undermined by this show.
They're just completely erasing anything that you could build off of from last night.
The only thing that really mattered that came out of last night was that Finn Balor felt like a main eventer. That has already been extinguished. And now,
that's already been done.
Now we have Asuka again working underneath. What the hell?
Well, if you think about it, they don't have another real pay-per-view consequence. Well, until the Royal Rumble, they'll have matches for their storylines. So until then, they can rebuild their stories.
If Kane's going to be the top heel in the show, why didn't he win last night? I mean, for God's sake.
We'll have to find out, in a few weeks or months as this develops. But Survivor Series is going to be a wash. So until after the fact, we're going to see many things happen on Raw and things maybe will have to get rebuilt. Remember, also, the big dog isn't here, so he needs to get better and get back. And it'll be a little bit before that happens. All right, so let's quickly finish up what we have left for TLC. Jason Jordan defeats Elias Sampson, which I didn't care for, but oh well. At least they were vegetables.
Rifter got robbed. Okay. Elias has more potential than any act in professional wrestling. All right. This guy is money. Now, I have a personal story about Elias Sampson. I was at a TV. I live in Orlando. I was at a TV taping for NXT the weekend of the Royal Rumble in 2016 at the University of Central Florida at the CFE Arena. Elias Sampson came out during every taped show. So he came out about four times. The fourth time he came out, there was a mass exodus, the likes of which I have never seen at a wrestling show. Everybody around me got up and went to the bathroom. You could see every row of stairs separating the sections.
I was there
for
that.
You were there?
Yep, we talked about that.
You can back me up.
We're literally stealing words from my mouth. Like, we literally laughed. Oh my God, everybody's leaving.
It was embarrassing. So while we talked about, we dragged Vince for not booking the NXT women properly. How many crappy little NXT acts come up to the main roster and totally flourish? Elias has been handled better than just about any NXT act that I can think of. Because he hasn't been put over really strong, but he also hasn't taken any really embarrassing losses. He wins most of his matches, or if he doesn't win, it's against, you know, real, you know, competition that is clearly pushed above him, but doesn't make him look bad. Or it's like last night where they did a controversial finish. So I think, and again, it's entirely possible that Elias Sampson is not a good wrestler. We don't really know yet. The only match where he really got to do anything of consequence was the no DQ match against Finn Balor, which was pretty cool. It was a good match. And then the other one was the Loser Leaves NXT match against Chris Hero, which I was also in the building for, and it was the most fun thing on that card. So, you know, I think the guy is money, and I'm not being ironic. I think that he pulls off the singing gimmick so well because he does kind of have the look and that voice, and he's figured out how to play the guitar a little bit, and the way that he addresses the crowd, his lines are funny. It reminds me in a way, and I don't want to make this comparison lightly, but it reminds me in a way of the John Cena Thuganomics gimmick. Yeah. This guy is so annoying, but he's also kind of funny. You know, I don't want to change the channel. I don't want to mute it. I don't want to get up out of my seat and go take a leak. This is funny. I want to see how people react to this guy. I want to hear what he has to say. And I think the dude is money, and I think there's a babyface act in there somewhere. The same way that Doctor of Thuganomics, you know, all they did was have him cut his diss tracks against the heels instead of against the faces. So all Elias has to do is, you know, once people, you know, realize how funny he is, you know, all he has to do is stop writing his songs about the towns and start doing them about his opponent. And there you go. So I think that, you know, that's obviously down the line somewhere, but I think the guy is a really good hand, and I think he's going to be around for a while. So, Patrick, I know you don't like him. Get used to it.
Well, you know, you say that we will eventually find out whether or not he's a good wrestler. I'd rather we don't find out, but alas, I always need a bathroom break, so why not?
First of all, I want to say, I'm still marking out to the fact that you were at that show that I was at, and we both realized the same thing. It was such a mass exodus that
image that I will never forget.
Like, I turned to my brothers, and we were like, no way. We were like, everybody is literally getting up right now and getting up and leaving. But
But NXT didn't even let him sing. He would just walk out there with a guitar and wrestle a bad squash match. Yeah. You know? They didn't do it right at all because NXT doesn't get fun. NXT doesn't understand anything that's fun. They understand functional wrestling storytelling.
Yeah. But I think Elias definitely has potential. We'll see what he can do in the ring over time. Sorry, Patrick.
I was kidding about the most the most in professional wrestling, but I do think that the guy is valuable.
Yes.
So how about that Cruiserweight tag team match, Alexander and Swan versus Gallagher and Kendrick? Now, that was a very good match.
It was good.
I'm going to have to agree. I thought it was a very good match, too. But the Cruiserweights, I want them to do well because these are guys I watched, these are guys I watched, like, I've been and seen them live at indie shows. And they're so good and they have so much potential, but the way the Cruiserweights are portrayed and the way that they just really give them nothing but go out there and have a good match. That's what it was, though. I mean, it was a very good match. It was a fun match. I really liked it. It was a fun, solid tag match. But it's probably not going to be anything I ever remember. And that's the problem with the Cruiserweights. A lot of their matches are good, but it's not going to be something I'm going to remember.
Yeah. And I also think that if they had wrestled in front of Evan's favorite crowd at Full Sail University, that match would have gotten a much better reaction than he did.
I don't care about the reaction, though. It's the same thing we were talking about with the fans during Finn and AJ. You know, there's a lot of, and this is, I just approach professional wrestling a little differently than a lot of other people in our community, and I imagine most of the people who listen to this podcast, in that, you know, a lot of it is that, you know, engagement with the crowd. I don't care. I watch it as a TV show. I watch it for, you know, I want to watch a narrative because I enjoy the characters and I enjoy the medium of the wrestling match. But, you know, if something's getting a huge reaction, then that gets me more invested. But, you know, I get it that these guys are not going to, you know, they've been given no reason to care about. So I'm not going to knock the crowd for not cheering for them. They've never been given a reason to care. As a match, it was really good. It was fun. You know, I didn't think it was anything mind-blowing. It was a fun 8-minute tag team match. A special word for Cedric Alexander, who could easily be WWE champion if they ever decide to give a rat's ass about the guy. And he could easily, his body could easily carry 20, 25 more pounds of muscle. And if they wanted him to get a little bigger, he's got incredible physical charisma. I had not really had any experience with him because I don't really watch much outside of the Fed.
And I've seen him live at indie shows before.
The Kota match, Jesus Christ. I mean, and you know, I understand that Ibushi is one of the best ever, but this guy was right there with him. And the moment that hooked me on Alexander was when he hit the brainbuster and he's got this face of pure elation as he covers him. Like, oh my God, I actually got it. I actually beat Kota Ibushi. And then the guy, and then Kota kicks out. And the look of just utter loss on his face. I was like, wow, this guy's money. This guy is absolute money. Push him to the moon. And he's stuck on this stupid show. And I just, you know.
That's what sucks. Is you've got talent, but you have them pigeonholed.
Yes, as a deliberate sideshow.
Yes. treated completely different, you know.
It was so weird for them to even have a second match on the pay-per-view. I'm not sure that's ever happened before. Outside of the kickoff. Have there ever been two cruiserweight? We gotta ask Devin. Have there ever been two cruiserweight matches on the main card of a pay-per-view?
Devin would know. But
I think the answer is no.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
And it was only because they threw everybody in the main event scene into one match.
Yep.
So, I don't know. Very frustrating. The match itself was good, but it seems almost silly to talk about it because it doesn't matter.
Yeah, I agree. It's just, there's no, like, that match happened, and there's no consequences to it now. It's just, it's a match that happened.
They continue to just go around in circles, having the same silly feuds with slight variations upon a theme. And the earth keeps turning, you know? It's nihilism as professional wrestling. That's 205 Live.
Yes, that is probably the perfect word to describe that.
We have to have another Raw update, as it seems that the really nice one-cycle Alexa-Mickey feud, which had a great ending last night, is continuing for no reason whatsoever.
Yes, it will be continued. Emma has to have another match with Asuka because, yeah,
This Raw is ripping my soul out.
The stuff
we said 30 minutes ago about Alexa and Mickey's match is now out the window.
The pre-show match, Sasha versus Alicia.
I'll do a quick note on it because I watched that match and I liked it. I actually think the women on this pay-per-view actually all... I think it was the most consistent in terms of performance-wise for all the women that I've seen that have had multiple women's matches on the pay-per-view. I didn't think... None of them were great matches, but I think that the consistency between all the women in these matches were... they all had good performances.
There's so much talent. There's so much talent on this roster.
Oh, yeah. But Alicia versus Sasha was a good match. It was a fun match. I thought Alicia did a great job, doing her crazy stuff, but actually incorporating it into the match. She did a great job of. Sasha is I don't know if she's a good bumper or a terrifying bumper. But you know, she had a couple good bumps in there, and it was a good solid match. But I was really impressed with the women on this pay per view, honestly, in terms of consistency.
And with that, it's time for the final grade to this show. Dustin, what'd you give this show?
I'm gonna give this show a C+. And just a quick reason why. I thought for what happened coming in with both Roman and Bray being out. Now, obviously, I think maybe Bray being out might have helped in some aspect. We got a real good match with AJ and Finn. But those guys being out, they kind of had to throw a bunch of stuff together. And with a lot of the main eventers or the people who you're going to have in matches being all thrown into the main event, the undercard had some cruiserweight matches and women's matches, but I think that they all, except for the Enzo match, that match did nothing for me, Enzo and Kalisto. But I think the undercard really being held up by the women and the cruiserweight tag and kind of a match that got thrown in at the last minute. Now, obviously, it was a great match and two guys who could have a great match. But I think they did a good job of holding it up just enough for it not to be a disaster. And the main event was not something. It was sort of fun, but I don't even know if that's the word. It was fun because it was so erratic and incoherent and fun for Twitter. It had some, cool spots in it, I guess, but it wasn't the worst thing I've ever seen. It was weird, but all in all, I think the AJ and Finn match, it had a great match in it, or a very good match, however you want to, categorize that. But, it has a match I'll probably, consider as a great match on a pay-per-view, and it had some consistency throughout on the undercard. And the main event, although it didn't impress me, it didn't make me unsubscribe to WWE Network. So.
Yeah, this Raw might do that for me.
I agree. But I give
this... Oh, my God.
I
actually had the exact same grade in mind coming into the show. Not surprising that we give it the same grade. Considering we had pretty similar thoughts on the show. I was a little more down on the main event than you. I think it did flirt with being a disaster on multiple occasions. And the Kurt cosplaying Roman thing was just so odd. One of the more bizarre things I've ever seen in the WWE. Just, and I understand, and I struggle. Maybe I'm being a little generous with my C+, because I understand that the show got blown up 2 days before it happened. So, you know, you can't really expect the main event to be anything other than what it was. But at the same time, they also got an upgrade by having Styles plugged in for Wyatt, and I'm giving the show credit for that match. So I guess it all evens out. Again, if we're grading this show on an individual basis, it's about a C+, although we're recording this again during Raw, and it seems like they are determined to make last night's show not mean anything at all.
Completely irrelevant, yeah.
So, yeah, I guess what we're, the last hour and 15 minutes of our lives have been completely wasted. Nothing matters. Nobody has a purpose. Even Arby's. But yeah, C+. I slotted it in 10th out of 14 pay-per-views so far this year. Probably not a show I'll revisit, but which is disappointing because we were excited about the whole Shield thing, and that it didn't come to pass is a bummer. Hopefully they get a chance to really do it down the line.
Yeah, I was super bummed about that. Like, really bummed about
it. If it had to be one of them, not Roman, anybody but Roman.
Yeah.
Or as Bray Wyatt, the man who apparently brought it into the locker room, always says, anyone but you, Roman. He really delivered. Finally, Bray Wyatt delivered on a threat.
And I will give this a grade of a B.
Wow. Is it just because Alexa won?
It's because Alexa won, let's be honest.
No, I mean, just because she's an A+ does not mean that she alone can carry a whole show. But I will say that, they did have to make changes. And, hey, I got AJ Styles. But also, like I said, a lot of these things came exactly as I expected them to. So I wasn't expecting a lot of great to begin with. So a lot of it has to do with the fact that my expectations were met. I wasn't expecting a top-notch caliber show. And with that, I give it a B. I'm going to be the generous one here today. Plus, I think I've given the last two shows I've watched some type of A or A minus. So, it's, I am downgrading here. I'm going down on my grade for the last few shows. But nonetheless, that's what I go with, a B. And we'll see where to go with here with Survivor Series next month. As announced already, Brock Lesnar versus Jinder Mahal, Alexa Bliss versus Natalya, Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins versus The Usos, and The Miz versus Baron Corbin, Team Raw versus Team SmackDown in a 5-on-5 Survivor Series elimination match, and Team Raw versus Team SmackDown in the women's 5-on-5 Survivor Series eliminations matches there. Hopefully they'll add one for the Cruiserweights as well, even though there's no Cruiserweights on SmackDown Live.
I want to talk about this briefly because I want to see how this audio holds up in a month. I think Jinder versus Brock is one of the worst ideas they've had in a long, long time. I don't see how anybody benefits from it. Both guys have really been hurt by poor performances over the last couple of months. One very poor performance in particular from Brock, a consistent string of poor performances from Mahal. And I cannot see a world in which this goes well or this looks good. The rumor, and spoiler alert, skip forward a minute or two if you don't want to hear this. PW Insider was saying today that the rumor is that John Cena will be the special guest referee, which suggests to me that Jinder will blame John Cena for losing, and they'll have that happen, and then John Cena will win the Royal Rumble and win his 17th championship from Jinder Mahal at WrestleMania, which is a terrible idea because it means Jinder Mahal will be champion until WrestleMania and be in a key match on that card. And I don't think Jinder is a WWE quality wrestler. But it just, I don't know. I love the idea of Survivor Series as the WWE All-Star game. I'm really excited for both elimination matches. I'm super excited for the Shield versus the Usos. But Brock versus Jinder at the top of the card, which is almost guaranteed to suck, is really bringing me down on the whole show.
Yeah, no, the Brock versus Jinder thing to me, I think I'm a little higher on Jinder than you. I'm not much higher, but I think
it worked for 2 months with a guy in Randy Orton whose sole purpose was to make Jinder look good. But the second Jinder got away from Randy, I think he's been completely exposed as a boring, one-dimensional, totally surface-level performer. Rudimentary, boring stuff that has no place being anywhere near the main event.
No, I'm on the same level of you as that. Like I said, I'm a little higher on him because I think his character, what he does, I think if he stepped outside of the current role that he's in right now, I don't think there's any way he'd be able to succeed in any manner personally.
Well, the booking has protected him unbelievably well.
Yes. But the biggest problem for me, honestly, with the Jinder Brock match is those styles in no way are going to complement each other in any respect whatsoever.
No,
Jinder
they won't.
Play a lot off of the Singh brothers and, you know, heel tactics, because I don't think he's the most functional wrestler in the ring. And Brock, the way that Brock wrestles is he's a monster. He goes out there and he destroys, and I just don't see those two things.
I can tell you exactly what's going to happen, Dustin. I can tell you exactly what's going to happen. Brock is going to work underneath.
Oh, my God.
That is exactly what's going to happen. He did it against Joe. He did it at SummerSlam. He did it against Braun. He is going to work underneath.
It doesn't work. That just doesn't work.
They have been presenting him as a Superman babyface, and they want Jinder to be this all-encompassing evil foreign heel. I guarantee you that's the way they're going to go. Jinder won't just take control. The Singh brothers will do something to get Jinder on top. But Brock is going to be the super baby face once again. And once again, a heel is going to benefit nothing from being in a match with him.
Yeah. Neither one of them is going to benefit, like you said.
No, Brock won't get help by it either.
It's not going to help either one. Yeah.
Because Mahal has no credibility with the audience. So even if Brock were to beat him easily, it wouldn't do anything for him.
Yeah. Well, we always have the Usos and
We have the Usos and the Shield.
I'm just going to live off
of that. God bless America.
I'm going to live off of that.
That's going to be outstanding.
I can't wait. That'll be a Survivor Series on November 19th. In Houston, Texas. So that'll be a fun watch, available only on the WWE Network for $9.99. Now, before we do go, can I just bring up a quick point that I didn't think about throughout? Is the fact that, okay, so Roman and Bray go out and they use the return to the ring of Kurt Angle and AJ Styles as replacements, but Chile also needed to get a replacement as they lost AJ Styles for the first time, and they get the King of Kings, Triple H, in his ring return since WrestleMania?
Yes.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Chile got a pretty good replacement for AJ Styles, I'll say, as far as attractions are concerned.
Hunter must have had some sightseeing he wanted to do. I'll tell you what, though. You know what? I bet you he's back pretty soon. Because there's only one logical end to this Shane McMahon family, Kevin Owens stuff. And it's Triple H finally getting to come back as NXT Papa Babyface on screen to face his favorite pet project.
Yes, you're right.
In a 30-minute... knockdown, drag out snooze fest at the Showcase of the Immortals.
God, it's just going to be a bunch of headlocks.
And Triple H is going to go over clean as a sheet. Give it to me. Inject it into my veins.
Do you know how furious I'm going to be if you're correct?
Yeah, but you know how plausible that sounds?
Oh, that sounds... That doesn't just sound plausible. That sounds like...
Sounds likely, doesn't it?
Like you just booked it. Like...
And you know what's going to happen? You know what's going to happen after that? They're going to have one more match at a gimmick pay-per-view that Owens will win with lots of outside assistance so that Triple H can claim that he put him over.
Yes, so Triple H can say, look, I put him over after I beat him on the biggest stage, you know, that we
Here's
have.
For you. Here's a fun fact that Devin will appreciate. Triple H in his career has never, ever lost at WrestleMania as a babyface to a heel. Not one time. The only wrestler he's ever lost to while wrestling at WrestleMania as a babyface is The Undertaker. That's it. You can count Randy Orton at WrestleMania 24, but he didn't take the pin, and Orton covered off of Triple H's finisher. That's the only time it technically counts, but that's it. And then he got his win back the next year.
He went over
Sheamus as a babyface when Sheamus was a hot heel, and I think he's going to do the same thing to Owens.
No, God.
So, yeah, we got Brock versus Kane and this on tap. Hope you enjoyed my conversation, Dustin.
This is going downhill quickly.
I'm going to send Dustin to a psychiatrist in the next half hour.
God, that sounds hideous.
This was a review of TLC Tables, Ladders, and Chairs. You can follow Dustin on Twitter at DriveByOutcast. Follow Evan on Twitter at Evan L. Weston. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA.
Raw just redeemed itself. Drifter hit Jason Jordan with the guitar.
Subscribe to the FOW Radio Network on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play. So goodbye, good night. We're out of here.